Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 27th, 2010, going right into the show. And I'll tell you right up front what the main science topic is going to be. I'm going to talk about the annual NOAA Hurricane, the Atlantic Hurricane predictions that were just announced yesterday. And I will be giving my own predictions tonight and tell you how they contrast, what's the difference, how do they predict. So anyway, that's the main science topic as we head into this storm season of 2010. First of all, a quick announcement. A friend of mine, John Moore, has just this evening started a radio show on the hour prior to mine on WWCR. So the same frequency, Tower 2, frequency 9.350. So if next week, if you didn't catch it this week, tune in an hour early and listen to what John has to say. And he covers many topics, some similar to mine. I have a vantage point as a scientist. John has a vantage point of military background and contacts within certain levels of let's say insider in those areas of say the government, that type of thing. So he has some different insights into the same topics. So anyway, just check out John's show. And I've been a guest on his show. I can't count how many times. A lot of times he'll call me up and say, "Jim, do you want to do some radio here shortly in the next hour or next Sunday or whatever?" And so yeah, I've been a guest on his show many times. Let's see, a few things. First of all, May 27, 2010, tonight, full moon. So if you think strange things happen on the full moon, tonight is the night. And I was looking at it last night, and I thought last night was the full moon just from looking at it, so it was very close. But and of course, that phenomenon of a full moon causing human behavior, or a new moon, is actually greater. But what happens is we get these electrical alignments, and that causes people to kind of come out of the woodwork, so to speak. Hair growing on their knuckles, all kinds of their teeth and fangs grow longer. But oddly enough, many scientific studies have shown that chemicals, for example, act differently. Some chemical reactions act differently during a full moon. Historically, planting and harvesting by a full moon. What else? All kinds of, you might say, wives' tales, but some of them actually true and stand up to their reputation. Tonight, the full moon. We should be living a little bit differently. Oh, first of all, I should make note before I forget. I've got a number of screens up here. So, Vanuatu, out in the Pacific. East of Papua New Guinea, east of Australia, there's a ridge line that runs down, and it is one of the few islands that dot that area. 7.2 magnitude earthquake just hours ago, rocking that region of the Pacific Rim, the Ring of Fire, and very strange happenings around the Pacific Rim this past week. I believe some people have been reporting on earthquakes that occurred in many different places at the same time, or nearly the same time. But that an entirely active area, and of course we haven't really had any solar activity that would warrant that level of adjustment. It's hard to say what exactly might be going on, but anyway, just to report that a 7.2 magnitude earthquake. Vanuatu, a very pretty little island, I understand, as many of those islands out there, countless islands out in that region of the southwestern Pacific. But how should we be living? And, you know, I'm trying to give a perspective. This is just a brief insight. You go to some very third world countries where people are living 10 people in a house, and this is just not immediate family members. It's grandma and aunt and maybe the son has children already, or one of the daughters already has children, and somewhat extended family living in the same house. And sometimes these are relatively small houses, But the one thing you find is they tend to be relatively happy, and they have a family life together. How many of us can say we knew our grandparents? How many of us can say we lived with, for many years in the same house with our grandparents, just as an example? And so I had a recent experience with someone whose grandmother passed away, and it was a very devastating experience, which it is for all of us. But when they live with you daily, certainly shows you the connection these people have with their family, something that's been lost, I believe, in the United States. So in the United States, of course, these people are very poor, and they live together for a reason. It's an economic necessity. We live in a world, in the first world, that of economic stability. People own their own houses. People have their own lawnmower and the equipment around the yard. Everybody has their own set of and this extends to the family, where family members, once they grow up, they get out of school or college, they move away into their own house. And we kind of lose track of that. Sometimes they move to a different city. And so we have a very different family structure now. And I'm wondering what's better. Certainly something in between, but it certainly would be good for many of us to have a family experience where we really are much closer to our family members. So just a slight observation there. Along the technical issue, when you search any of the news media today, you find the top technical stories dealing with iTunes, iPods, Apple Computer, being announced today that they're the second largest retailer in the United States. All of these tech stories in a world of technology for personal use, phones, if you look at the top businesses today, these should not be the top businesses. These are all basically infrastructure to help other businesses. When your communication industry, which should support industries of all types, when the communication industry itself is the largest industry going, there's a problem. And I don't hear economic experts talking about this. If you understand, if you look at a total global economy, there should be manufacturing, there should be agriculture, all those major businesses should be prominent, automobile manufacturing, housing industry, in a typical traditional economy. But when iTunes, iPods, and Apple handheld computers are the top technology and the top sellers, top industries, that tells you that what should be a supportive industry is the biggest industry. There's a real problem with what's going on. Also, this leads into engineering and science. Where is real science? It's pretty quiet. Not only pretty quiet, it's devastatingly quiet. And I know a lot of scientists from all walks of life listen to this show, now and then, some regularly. But if you're a scientist out there, look at the newspapers. You're not in the newspapers, Mr. Scientist. You're not. You're not in the news. So what are you doing that is no newsworthy? And the answer is probably not very much. From this top-down science industry that we have in the United States, where government funds everything and everybody has a ring in their nose, all the scientists out there, I don't, but all of the government-paid scientists, whether they're in industry, whether they work in the mill industry, the military industrial complex, or government-related support, 99.9% of all scientists somehow get their money directly from the government, or indirectly. But where should we be? Literally, today we should have commercial businesses with hundreds of thousands of people living in space, completely living, completely autonomous, and coming back to Earth to visit. And we should have hotels in space. We should have bases on the moon. We should have an orbiting train from the Earth to that goes constantly circling, orbiting the Earth and the moon to transport people and goods. But where are we? Oh, it's devastating. It makes my stomach turn to even imagine how ridiculously backwards and and just out of touch the science community is with where we should be realistically. Just a quick note, and of course I speak many times of misinformation, sometimes well-intentioned, sometimes not, and sometimes the misinformation crew uses people with good intentions but no understanding, absolutely no understanding of how things and how the real world really works. Recently, and I'm sure not many of you out there have been victimized by this, and received emails or that type of thing, just very few people, but just to give you an idea, people have been trying to send around, for example, statements that I said that Planet X is in the solar system, and as early as the earlier 2000s, and I've been always absolutely very careful about everything I say on the air, whether I'm a guest, whether I'm on my own radio show, whether it's my webpage, my books, my DVDs, whatever. I'm always extremely careful because I always have understood the amount of misinformation out there. And people have always been trying to get me to establish a date for when I think Planet X would come here. And, of course, I've said there are many Planet X's. There's thousands of them. And of the supposed historical one, we really don't have any solid information. We really don't. There's some kind of hand-waving statements floating around. But just to report what happened, some clowns out there think they're trying to influence people or I don't know what they think they're doing. But anyway, the statement that was, they were trying to quote me as saying the following: there are reports that a mini solar system is coming into ours. And that's where it stopped in these emails, and then trying to make it look like I was saying this. But what they failed to report is what I said immediately afterwards in the same statement was the following: I do not have any true scientific confirmation of this. So you see how people are trying to take sound bites, take them out of context, and make it sound like I'm saying things that I really didn't say. I was just reporting that there were people out there trying to report that a mini solar system was coming into ours. And then immediately following that, I stated, which I always do, that I do not have any true scientific confirmation of this. So the reason I'm pointing this out is because there's kind of a development of people out there who they want to go out and they want to get the word out and they want to preach to everybody, and they think it's their role in life to make everybody listen. And I guess they really don't understand that people really, if they're going to listen, they're going to listen. You don't have to go stand on the street corner on a soapbox and beat a drum. Because if people are going to understand about survival or preparedness, they're going to learn that. They're going to learn that from many different venues. And I am not a preacher. I don't go out and preach and say, oh, we got to tell everybody, or you got to go out and tell everybody that Planet X is coming, we all got to prepare. No, I don't do that at all. I have long, long, long ago learned that that is not the way you do things. Because then you started trying to include everything, like people talk to aliens and tell, you know, it just gets goofy. So the bottom line is, if you have been a victim of these kind of misinformation, the spreading of misinformation about me, what I tell people that are true followers of my work, is that if anybody references me, just put a link to my webpage. That's all. Don't try and quote me. Don't try and represent me. Don't say Jim McCanney says this or he says that. Don't try and do that because it's way too big. It's way too complex a topic. So just put a link to my webpage and people can go there and spend a long, long time figuring out what I really do say. So at any rate, and that's right on my homepage, where I tell people that they are to prevent people from picking up information on my webpage and trying to put it elsewhere. Then they mix it with other people, and then it gets goofy. And so these people don't understand that somebody's work is their own, and the best thing they should do is simply reference my webpage. Put a URL link to my webpage and say, you know, go learn for yourself, for better, for worse, whatever. Okay, on to a couple other topics. Kingston, Jamaica under siege. What a mess. What an absolute mess. And the way this has been explained to me by people who understand the international significance of what's going on, dozens of civilians being killed by SWAT teams that are going in trying to control the area of Kingston, Jamaica. But apparently the drug people there, who of course, should we like them? Well, I don't think so. Why? They are a result, once again, of bad ongoing U.S. policy, foreign policy. It's just another example. But be that as it may, the drug people there were putting their profits, apparently, into the fixing up the areas in these extremely bad slums of Kingston. So now what's happening is that the people are uprising against this siege to try and oust the drug people. The drug people are actually popular amongst the common people because they've used their drug money to fix the place up, something that the government never did. At any rate, that's just a somewhat of an inside view of that that was presented to me, something that you won't see in the mainstream news media. Okay, on to the hurricane season. I'm going to spend the entire show talking about this. First of all, yesterday, Miami Herald, front page, says this is when the announcement came from NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the branch of the government that tries to tell you about weather, about climatology, about all kinds of other things, or about how much oil is coming into the Gulf from that little leak down there at the bottom, which, of course, we found out they've totally underestimated by it's not clear how much, but by a tremendous amount, the amount of oil actually spilling in and the Gulf. But the same group that predicts hurricanes. And is that a total disaster? The number of factors that they include, not the least of which is the currents in the Pacific, the El Nino, La Nina currents, and temperature changes. But now, the front page of the Miami Herald yesterday says, loop currents help power storms. This is the headline, front page, Miami Herald, May 26th. Loop current helps power storms and worries. Now, that's a very interesting headline because I just want to say up front, look at the amount of money people make off of this prediction. Now, the prediction, everybody knows, is going to come out on a certain date. So if you are privy to this prediction that it's going to be a bad hurricane season, then there's all kinds of economic factors. People can make a lot of money by shorting, by selling long, by manipulating stocks and commodities. And this is based on the fact that if there are a lot of hurricanes, it'll affect shipping. That's just one factor. It could affect growing season. It could affect crops. It could affect many things if there is a bad hurricane season. So do you see how in one day a lot of people made a lot of money just because of this hurricane prediction that came out of NOAA? So at any rate, another private prediction centers also. I'll quote one from an outfit called AccuWeather.com. But they're all predicting a very hefty Atlantic hurricane season this year. Now, remember, the loop current is an Atlantic current system that brings the water, surface water, around in the Gulf region, in the East Atlantic region. And by the way, that would be the current they were talking about that would also move the oil spill out into the Atlantic Ocean and up the Atlantic seaboard once it gets that far, and there's probably little doubt that it will get that far eventually, the oil spill coming from the Gulf of Mexico. But that's not the topic of tonight's show. Okay, so they are saying, along with the many other myriad of factors that they consider in making hurricane predictions, that there will be a large number of hurricanes, major storms, and landfalls. That would be hurricanes that develop and then actually create landfall scenarios and then damage to our infrastructure, our society, etc. And then they go on to say that with this prediction that of the 160 years we've been recording and tracking hurricanes, that this could be one of the 8 top most devastating years. Okay, then other private agencies have predicted 16 to 18 named storms, then an average of impacts, etc. I just want to mention that a few years ago, NOAA predicted a... this is very funny. We had the Rita Katrina years, the very heavy, heavy years, where NOAA was way under count. And so then they came out the next year and they made a bigger prediction. They said, we're really going to have a whopper of a hurricane season, and they had a dud. So they were wrong that year. So that was the Katrina year, they were wrong. The next year they came out and they said, we're really going to have a big year. That year was actually more of a dud, and so they were wrong again. So then the next year they came out and they said, we're going to have a low year. And I don't know if these were right in sequence, but the timing was something to that effect. And so then that was the year when we had a number of more manipulated storms. And so that's another factor in here. And so now it was became obvious a couple years ago that NOAA began to incorporate manipulated storm data or predictions that would have to come from inside somewhere into their numbers. And this happened about mid-year one year, which was rather comical. But they couldn't figure out why all this storm activity was going on when there was no real reason for it other than, gee, manipulated storms. So I'll talk a little bit about more about that, manipulated storms. But basically, the storms are manipulated through a laser-guided system. You shine a laser down the eye of the hurricane that ionizes the path, and if you understand how hurricanes really work, then you understand that you can manipulate them by moving a laser beam through the eye and dragging it like you would drag a bull around with a ring in its nose. You can drag that hurricane around. You can increase its intensity, etc., etc. In fact, we've seen where they just drag them around in a circle, just playing with them to see how they can manipulate those storms. But at any rate, the... in fact, I have a kind of a comical note. During the Katrina and then Rita hurricanes, Rita, remember, was heading in towards Houston and the Texas coast. This was right after Katrina the same year. Bush and Cheney were in the command center, what we call the command center, in Boulder, Colorado. This was the Space Command Center. Now, why would presidents and vice presidents hang out in the Space Command Center in Boulder, Colorado, when hurricanes have nothing to do with outer space, according to NOAA? According to NOAA, there are only surface factors, like water temperature, vertical currents, vertical wind shear, factors like this that would affect hurricanes. So why would you go to a Space Command Center to watch a hurricane? You could watch it on the internet just as well sitting in the Oval Office. So at any rate, maybe they had their opportunity to put their hand on the joystick and actually control a storm a little bit. But at any rate, that's not the point of this show. It's just a little bit of history there. Okay, so the factors that NOAA uses in its computer modeling to predict hurricanes, and by the way, I'm very much against them predicting hurricane paths. This is a very bad policy because they've been wrong repeatedly. They've been very wrong about their path prediction. And this has caused a tremendous, tremendous danger for many people because this has happened repeatedly where NOAA has predicted a certain path people believed it. That's the problem, that people believe these predictions, and they go, oh, it's not going to hit here. And then all of a sudden, within hours, that hurricane is turning and moving in, and those people are trapped. They cannot get out of there. It happened over on the west side of Florida. It happened on the east side of Florida. It's happened all over the place. So for Noah to be predicting paths of hurricanes is really almost criminal in my view, because they are very bad at it, and if they make a mistake, it could cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And even though they say, oh, this is subject to such and such a percentage certainty, people out there don't realize that. The average person on the street is not listening to all those qualifications of their statement. And it's caused some extremely dangerous and in many cases very deadly situations for people who believed the Noah path prediction, and Noah was wrong. Okay, so at any rate, the factors that Noah uses to predict hurricanes, things like water temperature, salt content in the water, which can vary, ocean currents. Here are some other ones. They call it the multi-decadal signal, which, as they claim, has contributed to high activity in the Atlantic since 1995. Warm sea surface temperatures, they claim this year, La Nina, El Nino. And so at any rate, they're predicting, as I said, here is the actual estimate. And I'm going to read this just to show you how they make their prediction. Here's the statement that's on the official NOAA webpage. I'm reading it right off their webpage. It says, we estimate a 70% probability for each of the following ranges of activity this season. 14 to 23 named storms. 8 to 14 hurricanes. 3 to 7 major hurricanes. And other factors that... seasonal activity is expected to fall within these ranges in 7 out of 10 seasons with similar climate conditions, in other words, in the 70% probability. So that sounds like a prediction, but it sounds to me more like somebody who's going to Vegas and they're trying to figure out their odds of winning at the blackjack table. It really doesn't tell you anything. And you know what? In 2 months, they'll correct that prediction. In 4 months, they'll correct that prediction. And by the end of the season, they always end out just right. They end up with a prediction so that they can get their funding for next year and say, look it, we were right on target once again. So at any rate, I just want to point out that last year also, we saw a large number of manipulated storms, especially those 5 hurricanes that were manipulated and pounded into Cuba. Boom, just like bowling balls rolling over Cuba, coming from the north, coming from the south, coming from the east, and very clearly manipulated storms. There's a whole, if you listen to my radio shows during that era, last year, you'll find that I actually was on the phone to the stations in Puerto Rico, the AM stations, telling them that there was a hurricane, and this was also, I was on the phone to the radio stations in the Virgin Islands, telling them that there was a storm. I knew it was a manipulated storm, and I could see it developing. A fan had actually emailed in and said, it looks like a manipulated storm, so it's just a credit to my fans out there that they are educated enough to notice these things. So I went right to the internet, went right into the satellite feeds, and sure enough, developing as fast as you could imagine, there was a manipulated storm coming in through the Virgin Islands and would be to Puerto Rico by the middle of the night. And so I called up the Virgin Island radio stations and the main stations in Puerto Rico, and I said, there's a hurricane that's going to come, and it's developing right now. They called NOAA, because that's where they get their information. And Noah said, no, there's nothing out there. There's nothing at all. And so I talked to them again. I said, you start making these announcements, because Puerto Rico is going to get hit with a major storm. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And they didn't listen to me, but within a couple hours, they were at least, I made them aware of it. And then they could see it developing. And so they did get the signals out, the radio, information out, and Puerto Rico got hit pretty hard. And then one of those storms, that storm went into Cuba. I think that was the first of the five manipulated storms from last year. But anyway, I think that this year, just by the way, we're going to see a large amount of activity in terms of manipulated storms, and I'm going to tell you why. Basically, NOAA is predicting a large number of hurricanes, and I'm going to show you in my own analysis here why there should not be hardly any hurricane activity at all this year from a point of view of May 2010, from what we can see today, from realistically. And I know the mill guys out there know exactly what I'm talking about, because they know how hurricanes form, they know what causes them, they know the factors involved dealing with electrical conditions in the ionosphere and what drives hurricanes, so they know exactly what I'm talking about, that there shouldn't be many. So when all of a sudden we turn up with a lot of storms this season, if we do, then we're going to be watching very closely here to show you why they're manipulated. Okay, so at any rate, the NOAA prediction, as I said, just in summary, gives a prediction of a very high number of storms, one of the top eight most active seasons in history, according to the NOAA prediction. So a tremendously active Atlantic hurricane season, according to the NOAA prediction. Okay, let's see what Jim McCanney has to say about this. So what I do every year is my predictions are very different. My predictions are not based on the total number of storms for the season or the total number of named storms. That's not the way I predict. I look at solar system electrical conditions, predictable conditions, and then with some caveats, of course, attached, that if, say, a large comet comes into the solar system and starts truly interacting with the sun, we could have some solar surprises that change these factors. But given that those things would not happen, then my predictions are based on the current understanding of the solar system with electrical alignments, not physical, not gravitational alignments, but electrical alignments. And there are many factors. If you read my weather book, this is all explained in great detail. Solar activity is very low at this time. Solar activity is very low. So the expected input, electrical input from the sun, should be very low throughout this entire 2010 hurricane season. And by this I mean the solar wind. Now, the type of solar wind, very big flares, these are the type of things that can cause a differential potential, electrical potential, in the vicinity of Earth. And this is the type of thing that can trigger electrical storms, along with extended planetary electrical alignments. Let me give you an example, because that's kind of a mouthful and it's kind of an earful for many people out there. Let's give you an example of a very active hurricane season that we had. We had many electrical alignments. In one year we had, for example, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and a new moon of Earth, which I'll explain that a little bit in a minute. And we had Mars, also Jupiter. These were all lining up, and once those electrical connections are made, these electrical currents traverse the solar system in a radial direction, kind of like spokes in a wheel. And so once the planets connect, Earth has an electric field and an electric current that passes by it all the time as we move in outer space. So does Venus, so does Mercury, so does Mars, so does Jupiter. All the planets have them. So these are, imagine a spoke from each planet extending down to the sun and then extending way out beyond the planet also. So these are electrical currents. Now imagine the planets moving around, the inner planets moving faster in their orbits, completing their orbit much more quickly. Jupiter, for example, has a 10-year period, orbital period. Earth has a 1-year orbital period, and Venus and Mercury much shorter. Mars has a longer year than Earth. So they're moving around, with the inner planets moving around faster. So the inner planets catch, like Mercury and Venus, catch up to us and cause alignments. Now, the new moon also, when the moon, our moon, Earth's moon, is between us and the sun, it somewhat blocks that solar wind. It's way out there. It's way out, a quarter million miles out into the solar wind, far beyond our magneto sheath. And all of a sudden, it, in its orbit, the moon moves, and a couple days later, it's beyond where it's blocking that solar wind. And all of a sudden, snap, that solar wind comes pounding in and hits our magnetic field. It compresses it, causes a lot of electrical current activity, and that can also trigger hurricane and violent storm activity. So it's just one of the factors. So I have all of these different factors I look at that are electrical. This summer, 2010, there are literally no electrical factors that you would consider that would be a major cause of hurricanes. Now, my predictions in the past have been extremely accurate, where I predicted hurricane activity on a specific date. It's not like how many storms there will be this year. I say on this given date, we're going to have severe hurricane activity. And in some cases, I even said we could have multiple hurricanes developing on that same day, and I was exactly right. So my method of prediction is not a statistical prediction. It's a very exact prediction based on electrical conditions and electrical alignments in the solar system. So let's go through the months from June to December. June, electrical alignments affecting Earth, none. July, electrical effects affecting Earth, none. August, electrical effects and alignments affecting Earth weather, none. September, electrical effects and alignments, electrical alignments affecting Earth, a very, very minor one on September 21st, which is also the first day of autumn. Actually, the 23rd is the first day of autumn, but traditionally the 21st is the first day of autumn. But at any rate, and September 8th, we have a new moon, so that means around September 10th, a new moon passing 2 days later. But on also the 21st of Jupiter, we have a fairly significant electrical alignment that takes place between Jupiter, Uranus, and Earth. Now this, because those planets are way out there, those electrical connections could happen anywhere between, say, September 15th, starting September 15th, or even a few days earlier. So at any time in there, like back as far as possibly the 10th, we could have a bit of storm activity starting even as early as September 10th, when that new moon passing kicks that little jolt into Earth. And if Jupiter is very, very active, if the electrical connection to Jupiter connects in a little bit early, that type of time frame, we could have a bit, but not super severe, weather activity. And this could include tornado, thunderstorm, that kind of activity. But it's very late in the season also. By the September, we should have cooler temperatures, not conducive to hurricanes, tornadoes, etc. Okay, then on October 29th, we have a Venus inferior conjunction, and the full moon on the 23rd. The full moons, by the way, are much less of a triggering mechanism for hurricane activity on Earth than the new moon. The new moon passing is a very active, very powerful trigger mechanism for starting hurricanes. Then we move on to November 0, December 0. So just in summary, of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months in the hurricane season, actually the hurricane season has 6 months from June to November, I'm including December, because we have had some significant hurricane activity. In fact, some of my predictions have been for a Christmas hurricane. Remember that a couple years ago? And everybody had a good chuckle, and there was a Christmas hurricane. We had one right on target with my prediction. But at any rate, of the months again, let's look at them. June 0, July 0, August 0, September 21st, very minor electrical alignment type activity, which could produce some storm activity, but nothing to write home about. October 29th, also very late in the hurricane season, and certainly nothing to write home about. November and December, zero. So, in summary, the way I look at it, and I know the mill boys out there, the military guys who understand what I do and follow my work very closely, they understand also that this is going to be a complete dud of a hurricane year. So NOAA, using all of its incorrect factors and supercomputer modeling using incorrect factors, comes up with this amazingly active hurricane season. But then you couple that with the fact, I should be careful about saying fact, but the very apparent coordination between NOAA's prediction and manipulated storms. So if we start kicking off major hurricanes this year, you better believe we're going to be looking very close for those telltale signs of manipulation. And here's just to tell you what you look for. You look for the eye of the hurricane, the typical eye of a hurricane, relatively slow moving, and it's a very nice circle in a well-developed hurricane. You look for, then in a manipulated storm, what happens is it starts to stretch out in a certain direction, and that's the direction they're pulling it. So you know that that storm is being dragged off. You can also tell if they're increasing the energy in the storm by the same type of techniques, except they're pulsing and creating a very much higher electrical vertical current that's driving that hurricane. So that's the way they're manipulated, both in energy level and in direction. And so we'll be looking very closely, mill guys out there, you guys that like to play with your joysticks up there in Colorado and the Space Command Center, we'll be looking very closely for all those telltale signs of manipulation and of hurricanes and severe storms. In fact, you can even start hurricanes by the same techniques. All you need is a good charge in the ionosphere. But this year, once again, the solar activity will be very low, so it might not be as fun for these guys this year. They might not have as much fun as they have in previous years. But also last year, the solar activity was fairly low, and they were managed to have some fairly significant hurricane activity that pounded Cuba repeatedly, the five hurricanes that hit Cuba last year, which, by the way, is almost statistically is unheard of. But you never heard NOAA talking about that, that the very odd coincidence that one little island out in the middle of the Caribbean would be hit five times in a single year by major hurricanes. Where's the statistics there, Mr. NOAA, Mr. PhD scientist at NOAA? I love to make fun of these guys. They're so open, let's put it that way, to criticism. Healthy criticism, I think, in the scientific sense, at least. Here's an article that is also from one of the official hurricane answers questions about hurricanes. So here's what they say. What causes a hurricane? Listen to this. Just complete garbage. But anyway, I want to read this. So don't think this is me saying this. Please do not think this is me saying this. So I'll begin here by stating that this is completely bad information. It comes from one of the government-supported websites. But this is what they're trying to tell you causes hurricanes. Okay, I'll start reading now. So this is, as I say, I don't agree with any of this. Hurricanes are intense, low-pressure areas that form over warm ocean waters in the summer and early fall. Their source of energy is water vapor, which is evaporated from the ocean surface. Water vapor is the fuel for the hurricanes because it releases the latent heat of condensation when it condenses to form clouds, rain and warming in the surrounding air. Then they go on talking about wind shear and other factors, but and how the low pressure cell develops and this system keeps moving. The only problem is if you make calculations, you can show that there's nowhere near the amount of energy necessary to drive and maintain a hurricane. Also, if you have a low pressure cell and you have winds moving in at 200 to 300 miles an hour as you get in close to the center, and some hurricanes, we've seen them clock that high, or in an average hurricane between 75 and say 130 miles an hour, and you have wind pouring into that low pressure cell at that rate, how do you maintain the low pressure cell? Well, it's ridiculous. It just doesn't happen. So the now let me explain to those people out there who are not totally familiar with my weather work how a hurricane actually forms. Now, is in an example in the Atlantic, where storm systems, thunderstorm systems develop over Africa, large thunderstorm systems with lightning, with a lot of electricity, and that lightning, by the way, is coming from outer space. It comes through the ionosphere down to the thunder clouds that are developing are like fingers pointing up skyward, so to speak, and they connect electrically with eventually the ionosphere. And by the way, that's why scientists see elves and sprites and all kinds of other electricity above storms. But you know what? When you go to a scientific, international scientific meeting like I do regularly, and you go there, the scientists are saying, oh, that electricity is generated in the thunderstorm clouds, and it shoots up out of the thunderstorm clouds up to the sky. They have it backwards. They have it absolutely backwards. The storm is powered from energy that comes from outside the earth. But at any rate, be that as it may, the real cause of a hurricane, these storm systems develop over Africa. When they roll out, and by the way, their electricity from that electrical current path is reaching ground. It's basically that electrical activity is passing through the clouds and going down to the ground, mainly on the leading edge of that storm. So now, all of a sudden, that storm rolls out into the Atlantic, and guess what? The ocean is not a nice grounding, is not a good ground. It's a deep water ocean very quickly. So that electrical path, which has been built up, it has a lot of electrical momentum, you might say, has no place to go. So what happens? Well, it ionizes the air at the surface of the ocean. That ionized air starts to be drawn in and drawn up the vertical column. And as it comes up a vertical column in the thunderstorm, it finds the easiest path, and it starts to move in a cyclonic pattern, in a circle, in a vortex. And as that rising air, ionized air, starts to connect into the electrical path, that path opens up, and that is the flow, electrical flow of the hurricane. The electron currents coming downwards, the ion currents moving upwards. And it's very similar to a comet because the electrical current due to electrons is much higher. So it will power that hurricane as long as there is energy in the ionosphere. Now what do you have? You have a rotating cloud system that is being fueled from outside. The power source is from outside the hurricane, not somehow from evaporated water off the surface of the ocean. And so the evaporated surface water of the ocean is really a side effect of these winds passing over the surface of the ocean, picking up that warm water that's easily evaporated off the surface of the ocean as the winds pick up. And then that vaporized, that water-rich air, is ionized air, is driven up the column of the hurricane, the eye of the hurricane. And as it comes through the top, it condenses and spills out over the side. That's what a hurricane is. That's how it's powered. So you can see that all of the factors that NOAA uses in its prediction are completely bogus. It has absolutely nothing to do with the formation of hurricanes. A little bit extra warmth in the water or a little less has absolutely nothing to do with the formation of hurricanes or their existence or their heating up or moving or anything else. Also, the direction of the hurricane, this is a natural hurricane now, not a manipulated hurricane. As they start to move into the Caribbean or the continental shelf, they start to ground out because a very good conductor is shallow salt water with a sand bottom. A very good conductor. So those electrical currents that are powering the hurricane on the leading edge of the hurricane as it approaches landfall start to make connection with the shallow shelves that stick out from the continents. And so you start to see the hurricanes veer north or south, and they follow certain paths. When they come through the channel, the Yucatan, the channel northeast of Yucatan, between Cuba and Yucatan, it's fairly deep in some spots, but fairly shallow for most of that distance. So that's where they kind of hook around and it'll pull a curve up to western Mexico, northwestern Mexico. So you see all of these underwater factors influencing the direction of the hurricane. This is the real activity of hurricanes. So now you can understand when I make a prediction for hurricane activity, it's based on the power source, which is out in outer space, which comes from the electrical currents that pass by this planet all the time. But let's say that the sun is a very active sun, unlike what we have today. The solar wind is very active. It's changing very rapidly. It's whipping around out there. It's the activity in the solar wind is very powerful. It's changing very quickly. And then all of a sudden, these spoke electrical currents that pass between the sun and the planets, these start connecting. You start getting electrical alignments between Jupiter and Mars and Earth, or Venus and Earth and Mars. These localized planets, or even Mercury and Earth, can kick off hurricanes. You start to see these. Which are the major factors? You kind of have a factor in mind when you make these predictions. So you start seeing all of these factors add up. It becomes very predictable when you have, say, a 4, 5, 6 factors all in line with a powerful sun, things changing very rapidly, a new moon passing, all of these factors, boom, hurricane time. That's what causes hurricanes, unless you have a laser satellite in your back pocket. So at any rate, as I said, this hurricane season, the real factors, which are very predictable, very understandable, and as I said, I know the mill boys out there know just exactly what I'm talking about, because they follow this like a glove, and they know that this is going to be, according to true predictive standards of the real cause of hurricanes, this is going to be a dud of a hurricane season. Exactly the opposite of what Noah predicted. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, out in the classroom out there, what are we going to have? Are we going to have a dud, which is the real season, or are we going to have a lot of manipulated storms? Which brings up something else. Why do people do that? And that is very bizarre. It was very clear that there was a lot of political tension going on with Cuba last year. I don't know if you recall that. That Cuba had, in Washington, had some major political things going on. Remember, Obama said that he was going to allow refugees there, and Castro basically said no. The exchange of money, that's what he said. We're going to allow the people here to send money to relatives there. And I think the people in Cuba are smarter than that. They understand the ploys that take place in the Western banking community. And I don't know if you remember the exchange where basically Cuba said that in all the activity where Hillary Clinton went down to the Organization of American States, the OAS, meeting, and she left early because she was so confident that they would vote Cuba in as a member, and Cuba said, no, we're not going to become a member of this. This is just a banking shill of the United States and the Western European banking community. They had nothing to do with it, and she got egg all over her face because she got up and left early when she should have been there trying to pound down the Western banking agenda. Oh, well, Hillary, you don't hear much from her anymore these days, do you? But at any rate, they've got her buttonholed in Washington to where she cannot do or say anything without permission, and that's, I believe, where they wanted her. Because Hillary's for Hillary. This is a little political aside, and they, I think the big guys on top realized that Hillary is for Hillary. She's not a team player, and that's why she never made it anywhere near the presidency, because Hillary had her own agenda, and it didn't include, some of the other people. At any rate, a little political aside there, but as I say, that was included in that. Some of that political intrigue last year when the 5 hurricanes came pounding into Cuba like bowling balls. And they would come from the north and then be dragged due south. And then the last one, they ran it right down the whole length of the island. It was pretty amazing. And little Cuba is a very much a survival country. They're set up to survive, and if there's any place on this planet where there's a survival society, it's Cuba. Very interesting place. They've been able to survive the onslaughts of Western banking and economic pressures for 50 years, actually longer than that, 60 years. So quite the interesting political scenario, along with manipulated storms, just from our good old mill boys up there in the old control room in Colorado Springs, up in the Boulder, those places where they have their toy stores, let's call them that, the command center for the toy stores. Somebody asked me the other night, by the way, I was on actually a guest on John Moore's show about a week ago, and a guest called in and said, what do I think about the militarization of outer space? And I said, well, obviously it's going on. I did a show a number of weeks ago on the new X-plane, the new X-class shuttle, mini shuttle, unmanned shuttle that the military has to run experiments for, you know, basically to run military-type experiments in outer space. And I said, this is a very bad thing. That was never intended to be that way. China has killer satellites. And anyway, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail other than this is not the way of the future to try and bring your military into three dimensions in outer space. I'm going to spend the last minute here just talking about some of the things that you may need in the future. On my webpage, let me give you the webpage. Even people that order by mail order, I would encourage you to go to the webpage, JM as in Mary, C as in Charlie, C as in Charlie, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, seven letters, JMCCSCI.com. That's short for JMechanicScience.com, but I got the shorter US URL a long time ago so that on radio shows, people could easily get those seven letters and get to the web page. So people that are looking for the Dalton water filters, for example, or the flax seed, make sure you go to my web page, jmccsci.com, and there's a lot of other information, about 7 gigabytes of information. And by the way, I just want to point out that when you go to my webpage, it has my name at the top. I don't list other people's names. I don't use other people's names or information as a draw. It has my name. And that's the way it's going to be. That's the way it'll continue. Because I ride on my own merits and my own work, my own history, and it's all very well documented. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night. I'm cutting out a little bit early here because of the frequency change. WWCR is moving over to the nighttime frequency now. So thanks for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.